This is the first in a special series we are doing on stories from Standing Rock, and in perfect timing on today, December 4th, 2016, there's been a giant, great, amazing victory at Standing Rock where the section of the pipeline, the easement has been denied for the building of the pipeline section that goes through the lands and the waters that people are standing in demonstration to protect. Today we speak with Megan Tobin, who has been at the camp for 8 days and who has been in prayer for the water with the women, and who has traveled all the way from North Carolina with a group of 17 people to help support these demonstrators and to protect the water. And we speak with her on her way home as she's in the airport on her way back to North Carolina. And we talk about what it was like at the camp, what inspired her to go, and what do we do now that we have this victory? Where do we look next? And what can we do to continue to protect the waters and the indigenous people of the world?
So my name is Megan Tobin. And when I heard the call from the Lakota Sioux to come and stand with them in opposition to this pipeline that was threatening their clean water, their drinking water, I knew in my heart and in my soul that I couldn't say no to that. That I had to respond to that call. I've made a commitment in my life to solidarity with Indigenous people, and this was a clear, tangible opportunity to follow through on that commitment.
So when you heard it, you were just like, there was no question. This was something.
Right. I was clear. Mm-hmm. Well, there were a couple of weeks where I tried to talk myself out of it, thinking, you know, maybe they could use the funds that I would spend to get there more than they could use another body. And so I sent quite a bit of, you know, financial donations, and just still wasn't feeling fulfilled in, you know, in that level of action. And then I actually received a personal invitation from someone who said, please bring your body and bring other people's bodies. We need you there. And so I proceeded to find funding and put together a group of 17 people who really, really also wanted to be there, who also felt the call. And there were way more than 17 who would have liked to join us, but we filled a 15-passenger van and two other vehicles with people and supplies, and we went.
Wow, 17 people. Amazing. And you came, yeah. Tell us where you were coming from.
So all these 17 people were from North Carolina in the Piedmont. So these are people who are affiliated with the Eco Institute and partner organizations who had various skills that they wanted to offer, carpentry, culinary skills, activism skills, permaculture skills. And we put the group together pretty quickly, and it was a beautiful group. I think we're bonded for life now.
Amazing. So what was it like when you actually first arrived at the camp? What was the energy like?
So it was a bit confusing when I first arrived. It's quite a complex energy, and it's not set up in a way that we're used to in our sort of mainstream culture. There aren't really signs or directions or maps or people in charge. Clearly in charge. It's kind of a coyote finding your way, asking questions, sniffing around, figuring things out, kind of way of getting to know a place. And I found that really fun. I knew a couple of people on the ground, and my first mission was to find them. And then, you know, the questions are like, okay, where do I sleep? Where do we eat? And all these questions had been addressed by the community collaborating. And when I say the community, it was a global collection of people. It was people from all over the globe. There were people from the Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere and the East and the West, people who had felt that call in their hearts as well. And the way that they worked together was extraordinarily beautiful to co-create this this village, this you know, impromptu village with a shared purpose. And the purpose was protecting the water.
Mm-hmm. And then, so did you all bring your own sleeping places, or did you, like, what was it like to actually figure all those things out?
Yeah, we did a, well, we did some research and realized that the kinds of tents that we're used to camping in North Carolina were not going to cut it in North Dakota winter. While I was there, we received 2 feet of snow, which, you know, drifts up into like 4 feet. And the kinds of tents that we use in North Carolina were just flattened by that and 40 mile an hour winds. So we used the funding that we had raised from, you know, hundreds of community members who really, really wanted to support what the Standing Rock tribe was doing and standing up to this pipeline company. And we purchased a structure that is able to withstand snow and wind. It's a structure that is made by a little family company in Asheville called Red Sky Shelters. What they've done is they've hybridized a Mongolian yom or ger with a geodesic dome, excuse me, a Mongolian yurt or ger with a geodesic dome. And the word that they've come up with is yom. And so I love it because it rhymes with home. And it's this beautiful septagonal or octagonal, depending on which kind you choose, sort of round hobbit house kind of a structure that's made of canvas and wood. And that's what exists at the Eco Institute for the students to live in, the young adult students who do the Odyssey Fellowship program. And they love them, and they're able to be insulated, and they have a wood stove and a platform floor, and they can be disassembled and reassembled in a couple of days. So that seemed like the obvious choice to us, and Red Sky Shelters gave us a great deal on a yom kit. And so that was the main thrust of the group, was to erect, to build this yom that we then left for a group of indigenous grandmothers. And during that time, we slept in other various kinds of wall tents with metal poles. And it was cold. It was really, really cold. It was sub-freezing most of the time that we were there. And though the conditions were physically challenging, I can't even begin to describe how strong the spirits were. The hearts were so incredibly strong. And, you know, people would emerge from their snow-encrusted tents with huge smiles on their faces every morning and just praise the day. And it was an extraordinary experience.
Hmm. And what was life like there day to day? What kind of things do you actually do when you're, you know, supporting protectors of the water?
Right. So this is an indigenous-led movement, and that's really important that there not be European people of European descent whose ancestors were the colonizers coming in and saying, here's how we're going to do this. It's a real intentional choice to let the native people make the call about how we're going to do this. And so before the sun comes up, this beautiful native grandfather gets on the loudspeaker and he says, get that bow, get up. It's a beautiful day. We're here for a purpose. Get up. We have work to do. And, you know, we're rolling over in our sleeping bags and just grinning because we love this beautiful grandfather. And he begins to say his prayers in Lakota, and then the other elders come in and they're singing their prayers in Lakota before the sun even rises. And we all emerge from our tents and pull on our snow gear and our boots and our hats and our mittens and, you know, stumble over to the sacred fire where there are hours of prayer before dawn. And that is the primary focus. An important lesson I learned at Standing Rock is that everything we do can be a prayer. And so whether we are building our shelter or washing the dishes or cooking for the camp, those are all prayers. And so it brings an extraordinary new level of awareness to every task. my favorite parts were the prayers led by the women. In the Lakota tradition, it's believed that the women are the protectors of the water and the men are the protectors of the women. And so it's women's job to protect the water and protect life and to carry life and to carry water. We carry the babies in water in our bodies, and the babies are born on waves. And the men recognize this, and there's a deep respect for women and women's life-carrying power. And so the women blast sacred water every morning and sing together. And then it's probably about 45 minutes to an hour of beautiful prayer in native language over this water. And then the water is lifted to the sky and lowered to the earth in a certain number of times. And then the water is carried by the grandmothers around the circle and passed to each person and shared with each person so that they might drink of the blessed water. And then that water is walked together arm in arm by the women in copper vessels all the way down through the icy roads of the camp, all the way down to the Cannonball River, which leads into the Missouri River, which ultimately leads into the Gulf of Mexico. And that water that holds those prayers is offered to that river. And then every woman in that ceremony who has had a chance to lift the water, to hold the vessel and walk with it, takes a handful of tobacco in their left hand, which is the hand that's closest to our heart, and sprinkles it into the river with our personal prayers for the water. And when I first started doing this 8 days ago, it was maybe 50 women, maybe 40 women, and maybe the same number of men or slightly fewer. And that number gradually grew throughout the week. And today, this morning, there were probably 250 people in that morning prayer ceremony. And it took more than 3 hours. And that is believed to be what's most important. More important than protesting, more important than direct actions, more important than anything else we can do is those prayers. There's an ancient Lakota prophecy about a black snake that would come and threaten the lives of the Lakota people and of the rest of the earth community. And the prophecy goes that the black snake will only be defeated with prayer.
Wow, powerful. And it's something that it seems like that's that wisdom that's been lost with the people of European descent coming and taking this land, you know, in the past few centuries is everything seems to be so physical and action oriented, but the wisdom is it's this intention and energy and connection through prayer with spirit and with elements and with each other. How did that shift in you? Did it shift things in you? Do you feel different or changed?
Absolutely. I do. I don't think I'll ever be the same after praying with those grandmothers. Mm-hmm. And you know, so much of what our culture is coming to wake up to in terms of unintended consequences of our actions, the medicine for that and the remedy for that is held by the Native people, who we've almost extinguished. They're a fragmented remnant of what they once were, and European colonization is directly responsible for that. And I believe that we're realizing it just in time, mm-hmm. and that it is recoverable, and that if we are able to recognize the folly of our ways and our choices and call on our Native brothers and sisters, that they can teach us these ancient ways that are the antidotes to this modern way of life that's gotten us into this mess.
Mm-hmm. I definitely hear you on that. And it's funny because I've even had some conversations with people about this, about why it is so important that we protect Indigenous rights and Indigenous people and wisdom, and just at least allow it to continue in some way, because that's where the answers, I believe, are.
Yeah.
And
it's a big part of what's going to save us.
Mm-hmm. And like people who don't understand that are, I believe, still in denial that there's a problem.
Well, denial is the first stage of the grief process, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a real hard realization to come to. It's real hard to accept that we could be destroying our own life support system.
Right. Mm-hmm. And to take on all those feelings of the responsibility and guilt that come with that epiphany.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So it absolutely makes sense that people would be in denial.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love this vision of 250 or more people praying with the water and just taking hours. And like the time doesn't matter. Nothing matters but that intention and that presence. And
right. That was the priority. And you know, Natalie, I don't think that should be underestimated in the miracle that happened today.
Definitely.
When we read about the story initially, it felt like an impossible battle. It felt like there was no possible way that four of the most powerful forces in the world today, the U.S. military, the U.S. government, international banks and fossil fuel companies, could possibly pull back on this one. You know, they've put billions of dollars into this already, and they're very comfortable with the status quo and business as usual. And it seemed like an impossible fight. And this request that the Sioux held to reroute this pipeline just got honored today, and it shocked us all. And there's this incredible sense of relief and gratitude that pipeline won't cross the Sioux land and the Sioux waters. And at the same time, a threat to clean water anywhere is a threat to clean water everywhere. The water exists in cycles. And if pipelines continue to be built and continue to carry fossil fuels anywhere near the water, anywhere, the battle isn't over.
Sure, there's so many things intertwined here of, I mean, I can't even get into all of them, but you know, the Indigenous rights, protecting the water, and also our addiction to oil and fossil fuels.
Right. Right, and the climate repercussions of that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's like everything's so connected here.
Right.
And
right. Well, the science is clear that the burning of fossil fuels is the direct cause of climate disruption. And it's only a matter of time before we have to move out of the denial phase of that and into action. And amazingly enough, solar energy just became less expensive than new construction of fossil fuel plants. So the scales have just tipped, and also we've just exceeded the parts per million that are the real scary levels of carbon in the atmosphere. So it's a really potent time that we're living in.
Mm-hmm. And with all of this happening, I mean, we obviously need people to do things and take action. But with this realization and actual experience that you've now had at Standing Rock, with seeing this devotion to the water and this prayer and this intention and this just complete focus on healing this connection and healing whatever it is that we've disrupted in our connection with the water and our respect for and with the water. And I'm thinking, like, what will this experience now shift how you approach all of these other issues like climate change and fossil mm-hmm. fuel use and everything? I mean,
yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think so, Natalie.
And
this has been my first experience of an environmental movement that's spiritually integrated, mm-hmm. where a sense of the sacred is at the heart of our decisions and our actions. And mm-hmm. that's been profoundly influential for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. It's like the spirit is really driving everything.
Yeah.
It's hard. So as a Westerner, and as, you know, you're someone who gets stuff done. You don't mess around. You get stuff done.
Yeah.
And so, like, seeing this shift and the sort of surrender that prayer takes, how do you see yourself moving forward in allowing yourself to do this and to sort of let go to that need to always be doing? Do you see that?
That's a great question. So I think what I'm wanting to learn is to strike a balance between the being and the doing, between the prayer and the action, and integrate the two so that it's not one or the other, but that there's a true balance where the doing is the prayer and the prayer is the doing. And that takes a level of awareness and a practice of slowing down. That's been another big lesson for me this trip, is in taking time to be careful and considerate and to make good choices and to make sure my actions are right and good before rushing to get something done.
That is... Mm-hmm. And even within doing that, it's like you set this strong boundary within you that says, no, these things are important.
Yeah.
That then reflects outward in it, that ripple effect.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shift. It's it's different. It's not the old story of more is better and faster is better. It's a part of a new story.
I think a lot of people are really feeling that too, of like they want more simple and they want to slow down.
Yeah.
And it's so tricky as a Westerner, as an American who's been raised in a consumerist culture, to understand what that means, because it goes against every single thing we've been taught and programmed. But that doesn't mean it's impossible.
Right. No. And you know, it doesn't have to be one or the other. Again, it's coming into balance. So realizing that efficiency and productivity and organization have their place and are really wonderful, powerful technologies, and they're not the only way. And in fact, when they are the only way, there can be unintended consequences and mistakes and severe repercussions. So to really integrate the industrial, the lessons of the industrial growth economy with the lessons of the more ancient indigenous feminine life sustaining societies, and that's how we move forward as a species, I hope.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Yeah.
And it's funny because the same act can be done both ways. It's just on the outside, it might look exactly the same, but it really is that inner knowing or intention that's guiding it.
Right. Yeah. So one of your original questions was, what can people do? And, you know, that question, if you had asked me this morning, is different than the answer to that question right now because of this amazing news from the Army Corps of Engineers. And I think the first thing we can do is to thank the Army Corps of Engineers and President Obama. You know, hundreds of thousands of people have been calling and writing letters, and they just did what we've been asking them to do, which is to refuse this easement. And that's huge. Mm-hmm. And the president-elect could potentially renege on that. But I think it's very important that we respond and thank them for the courage that it took to make this choice. Certainly the fossil fuel companies and the banks that support these companies are, this is frustrating news for them because they're on a timeline. And if they don't meet their timeline, they lose money. And they have $2.5 billion worth of loans and have, you know, they have a schedule. So thanking the Army Corps of Engineers and President Obama for really listening to the people, I think that's number one. And number two is to tell the story and to keep these people and to keep all the indigenous communities threatened by corporate destruction in our prayers every single day. The third that feels really important to me, I mean, in the beginning it was send food, send sleeping bags, go stand with them. And now we're seeing that that the fight is really shifting a lot. And so what seems important to me now is funds for legal defense for water protectors who were arrested and jailed and charged. There are still people in jail, and they were the brave ones who really stepped up front. And many of them are Native American people without the financial resources to bail themselves out of jail and without the financial resources to get legal representation. And so in the system that we're in, that is imperative. They must have solid representation or justice will not be served. And so contributing to a legal defense fund is really important. And then, you know, the last thing I would say is keep paying attention. You know, this isn't over. It's not time to turn off the TV or the whatever your source of information. Really stay tuned and research all the other situations that are facing the same threat and just haven't had the kind of attention or haven't had their call for help heard as well as Standing Rock did. So, you know, fossil fuel companies continue to exploit indigenous communities around the world. And I think what we're seeing is when people can come together and work together on a true nonviolent response, it can change what's happening. And so, you know, I think that the question for me at least is, okay, where next does the water need protecting? Who next needs us to come and stand with them?
Mm-hmm. And it's funny, as you're saying all this, I'm thinking, you know, we just started with this special segment of like, I'm really willing to just hear anyone's story and share it. And I'm like, wow, right? This is literally happening right as the pipeline has been denied access. But this feels like right. The story's just beginning because it's opened up this new shift in awareness for these issues and for
right.
what we must continue to stand up for and speak out about and represent.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you for that reflection and words of wisdom.
Yeah. You know, something else that that feels really present for me right now is I was just reading something, a blog post that my dear friend Charles Eisenstein wrote about our collective longing to change the story, and that that's also at play here, that we as a people of the United States can no longer deny the atrocities and the genocide that was committed on the first people of this place. And we can't go back and change what happened, but we can, and we are beginning to take actions towards truth and reconciliation. And there is a lot of damage that is going to require a long process of healing and trust building. But that process has actually started, and I witnessed it at Standing Rock. I witnessed trust between people who were previously enemies, people from tribes that didn't get along, people from people whose ancestors were killed by other people's ancestors, you know, and we see that we need to move forward differently. And, you know, it's important to remember that the majority of people in this country did not vote for our current president-elect. And even the people who did are unhappy with the status quo. And so we're really ready to change the story.
Excellent. And I'll include a link to that article in the show notes.
Great.
Too. And a link to where people can contribute to the financial funds for the legal resources.
For legal defense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
Definitely. Awesome. Yeah. And Megan, is there anything else? Because, you know, for our listeners here, Megan's sitting in the airport literally on her way home.
True.
So thank you for taking time to talk to us in the middle of traveling.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Is there anything else that about your experience there or what you saw or what anything else that you just really feel called to share?
That this new story has actually begun, and that it's not being publicized or, you know, there is no leader to the movement that we're noticing now. But all you have to do is look at the Dream Freedom Beauty podcast website and see all these examples of this blessed unrest, as Paul Hawken calls it, that's driving us all to work for healing and work for the world we want. And so I encourage people to see where that's happening in their own lives and hold the question, how can I be of service? How can I be of service to healing our world?
Yeah. And then when that answer shows up, trust it, because sometimes it's
Say
not
yes.
what you think it is.
That's right. Sometimes it's leave your children at home for 8 days and go to North Dakota in the winter. Yeah, or something crazier, you know, but say yes. When you feel it and you know it, say yes. You'll be supported in ways that will amaze you.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. If anyone wants to get in touch with you for more, is that something you're open to? If they want to?
Absolutely.
Okay, and how could they do that?
So the Eco Institute's website is www.eco-institute.org. And it's the Eco Institute at Pickards Mountain. That's our organization. And when you hit the contact button, that email comes to me. And when you see the phone number there, that is my cell phone number. So the office is in my pocket. And I welcome conversations about Standing Rock. We will be posting on the website about a story share and potluck dinner in the next 2 weeks, where the team will be sharing stories and pictures from our experience. And the hundreds of folks from the community will be able to come together and celebrate, really.
Awesome.
That's happened.
And I will have links to your website on the show notes too. And I really encourage listeners to check it out, no matter where you live, but especially if you live in the Triangle area, because they are really holding this space at the Eco Institute of how can we write this new story. And so
yeah,
I encourage you to get in touch, go check it out and take action, and also be in prayer.
Yeah.
Prayerful action. Cool.
Yeah. And join us, you know, if you want to do it with a community of people who are working in these ways. Our 2016 programs are winding down, but pretty soon our 2017 calendar events will be up. And we do things like come together in potluck and celebration of the equinox and the solstices, and have permaculture workshops and field trips for school kids, and leadership programs for young adult environmental leaders. So, yeah, I encourage folks to sign up for the email list so that they know what's happening, and come on and join us.
Thank you so much, Megan. And I really hope
My
we can
pleasure.
Get you back on the show to talk about some other stuff, because I know you do so much awesome stuff. And
I'd love it.
Yay. And travel safe. Yay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Bye.
All right. Say hey to Lizzie for me.
I will.
So there you have it, listeners. Thank you so much for listening and tuning in. And if you're feeling called to help out, you can still help out with Standing Rock by contributing to the Legal Defense Fund. And there are so many places around the world that could use your help and your support in protecting the water and the indigenous people. So I encourage you to just do some research and find something that really resonates with you and support them in whatever ways you can, whether it's going to stand with them or sending supplies or money or helping your legal, you know, your maybe your lawyer with legal expertise and you can help with this, something, just, you know, whatever it is, every little action adds up. And of course, this miraculous victory at Standing Rock today shows that the power of prayer is real and the power of demonstrating is real, and that it is possible to have a nonviolent transformation and success in opposition to whatever it is that we are not wanting in our lives as a culture and as individuals. And if you would like to get links to what we talked about, you can go to dreamfreedombeauty.com and just look up Megan Tobin, and the show notes page will have all the links. If you or someone you know has a story to share from Standing Rock, please let us know, and we'd be happy to give you a space to share.